Greer. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast.
As we head into the international break, I'm delighted to welcome along Motherwell Football Club Chief Executive Alan Burrows. Alan, thanks very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure as always.
Well, there's very rarely downtime in football, and the summer months at Fir Park have been very busy, and it's also been a busy time for you personally, becoming a father for the first time. So we'll start with congratulations from all three of us.
Oh, thanks. As every dad or mum listening to the show, I'll no doubt sympathise. It's a busy time in Emily's life. It's a challenge. You forget what sleep is most of the time. But listen, I should put on record, given that she'll be listening to this, but my wife Emma's been first class. She's took up a lot of responsibility, particularly during the night, which has allowed me to get some sleep, which allows me to continue to function as a chief exec of a Scottish Premiership football club. So, you know, from my point of view, I must thank her. And it's been a fun time having a wee girl. She's now just over 11 weeks old. So, yeah, it's been a fun summer away from football, that's for sure.
And another new arrivals, and I said that earlier as I typed that out last night, I cringed when I said it then again, so that was a horrible link. But Stephen Robinson set his stall out in improving the depth of the squad, and he's done that with 8 new signings, 6 signed permanent deals, 2 on loan. How would you assess the business done over the course of the summer?
Yeah, I think you covered it there in the question, Andy. I think the manager was quite explicit towards back end of last season that his desire to improve the squad, you know, he wanted to tweak little bits in terms of the starting 11, but, you know, moreover, I think he wanted to improve the depth. You know, he wanted to get, you know, positions 12 to 16, as he described, in a stronger state. You know, he referenced the November-December period, if you think back to that, where we had a succession of injuries. I think at that time, I remember it was Carson, Cadden, Molt, and one other whose name I can't remember at this particular moment, were all out, and that was kind of the spine of the team. And I think we went on an 8 or 9 game run where we didn't pick up many of any points at all. And if you actually look at the season overall, that probably cost us a top 6 spot. If you think of how far we finished behind, even a couple of those defeats into a win, or a couple of draws into a couple of defeats into a draw, or a couple of draws into wins, might have made all the difference come April and come the split. So I think the desire was always to, you know, keep the squad we've got, try and improve little bits of it if we can, but also improve the competition for places and make sure that there's people pushing other people from behind. And, you know, so far I think we've had that, but the proof of the pudding will ultimately be eaten, and we'll only see that in the next coming months.
In terms of departures, only one, but it was a significant one in losing Cedric Kiepre.
Yeah.
A big blow, but it's been nice to see the club not rolling over and accepting the first offer. Is they were perhaps guilty of maybe 5 or 6 years ago?
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair criticism. And it's not a criticism of the people here at the time. You know, obviously, the business is varied. We can be far more aggressive in that approach, Andy, because, for example, we got to 2 cup finals because we've sold players already in the past. It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy for a football club that if you're starved of cash and you need the money, then quite often other football clubs know that and will try and lowball you with bids. And listen, that's not them being disrespectful, that's just them doing the business that they have to do. What I've said to Motherwell fans in the past, both in this show and in others, is that we'll try our best to not roll over and be tickled to any particular point, that we will actually be as aggressive and hold out for players. And we've done that as far as Cedric's concerned. You know, I think it's fairly well documented that Wigan weren't the first Championship club to bid for Cedric over the summer. Another one did, and actually the total value of the bid was less than half of what we actually ended up getting for the player. So what that does show you is that if you've got a little bit of balls, if you've got a little bit of the determination to hold out, whilst being able to also manage the player at the same time, because that's often the bit that's overlooked when it comes to these things. It's been very public with another club not far from here just recently of how difficult that can actually be. But, you know, when you're dealing with personalities and you're looking at the whites of people's eyes and you're talking about their life and their future, and, you know, it's not always easy to be as robust as that. It's not always easy to, you know, potentially tell people that you're going to have to restrict them from potentially earning a lot of money, might set them up for life in some cases. So, you know, that isn't always easy, but, you know, I always find good open levels of communication from the club, and that's mainly through the manager, because, you know, the football department's his department, works well. And in the case of Cedric, that was absolutely the case. He was more than happy to reject the offer that we first came in. He agreed with us that the valuation that was put on him was poor, and didn't push or pressurise the club to sell him in any way. And, you know, I should be really thankful for him. He handled himself fantastically well. And then when we did get an offer from Wigan that we felt that was right for the football club, then, you know, we had to accept it, not only for him personally, because it was going to make, you know, it was going to be a significant improvement in his own personal terms, but also from the football club and the model that we have. We talk all this time about model and strategy, and sometimes people laugh at that, but, you know, in order for this football club to survive and thrive long term, we do need to continue to sell players. We can't rely on it to survive, but in order to thrive, we need to make sure that, you know, every couple of windows we're looking to move somebody on for a significant fee. And, you know, we've actually had a bit of a golden spell when it comes to that. I think, you know, think of Marvin Johnson and Ben Hennigan, Louis Moult, and now Cedric. You know, we've had some success there, so, you know, that helps us convince other players that this could be the club for them, that they can see themselves going on a similar journey and path. And we'll try and use that in the upcoming windows to attract more players to come here.
And while it's obviously the basis of the transfer is on his performances at Motherwell, you then look up and moving on to Wigan and you hope that he performs well again, because there's obviously tie-ins and clauses there. Yeah. And he's made a fantastic start at Wigan.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was man of the match. I think I tweeted about that just at the weekend there. He was man of the match in their 1-0 victory over Rotherham, which is brilliant. And all the feedback from Wigan, who I should put on record publicly, I think I've said already, were handled it excellently, very professionally, their whole dealings with Cedric. You know, they've not only started well as a team, but also Cedric as an individual has also started well. And, you know, that bodes hugely well. I think one of the key things that we've tried to do at this football club, certainly in all the four transfers that we've just mentioned there, is try to build on some level of add-ons and you know, some share in future success, because that's it tends to be the money. Actually, if you think of the Marvin Johnston deal, for example, we end up getting more from the sell-in from Marvin than we actually got in the initial transfer fee. And that goes to show you at times the bloated nature of the English market when it's England to England, if you like, the two teams in the same association. And we're hoping to try and capitalise that at some point in the future with Cedric as well. And, you know, that means Wigan have won because the players obviously done well for them, but also hopefully then we win some point down the line as well. And, you know, that's good business. That's what we're trying to achieve here. So yeah, every time it's one of the first results I check after Mother when I'm coming away from the game is how did Wigan do, how did Cedric do. Also check it with obviously Louis and Ben Hennigan and other guys who have moved on as well to see how they're doing, for the same reasons, not only because they're decent blokes and they're good lads and they serve this club so well, but also because we've got a bit of a vested interest in them too.
And selling players for good money is also a huge benefit of the business model and the fan ownership model, which yeah, seems to be continuing to thrive.
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile pointing out, and this is a matter of public record, that it's also helped us clear our historic debt as well. In any walk of life, when you want to start kicking on, if you've got a debt to pay, you need to, you know, figure out the mechanism in which to pay it. And, you know, both our two previous owners have been generous in their approach to allowing us to, you know, facilitate that through upside to the business, and because of that, we've slowly but surely carved into that, and we're certainly heading on the right direction, the direction I want to take this club to, which is a completely debt-free scenario, and we're getting close to that every time we make one of these transfers. So that's the first point to note. But yeah, overall for the business as well, it makes for a healthier environment. It allows us to not only invest in the squad, but also hopefully people have seen invest in some of the facilities around about the stadium. You'll have seen, no doubt, over the summer, the arrival of the scoreboard and the ticketing system and a few other bits and bobs that no doubt we might come on and talk to. But, you know, a lot of that can only really happen when you continue to sell these players in that manner. Is it sore when Cedric leaves? Yeah. Here's a wee bit of information that I've never really told them. Every time that I'm signing the transfer agreement, and I've done it in the last four, almost, and I'm not particularly religious, but always say almost a wee prayer to myself saying, please don't make this be the one that really costs the club by moving them on, you know, because every time, you're selling good players. You know, the manager is always, you know, making up to me that, you know, you're effectively selling, I mean, Cedric Keeper, we've sold them for, you know, one of the most substantial fees in the club's history. He's going to the Championship to earn money. They would make him one of the highest paid players in the Scottish League had he still been here. And then we're having to try and replace him within our budget. So it's all that challenge always exists. So every time you sell somebody, you're always hoping, like, hopefully, let's hope for the next one. Let's hope we can try and do this again. You don't want to be the one that, you know, that kind of hurtles you a little bit. So, you know, every time I sign it, I always pray that, you know, the club will be fine and we can find the next one to go there. So there's always that little bit of trepidation when you sell players, because you don't want to lose players. And I'm a fan, first and foremost. You want to see as many good players out there as possible. But, you know, we've also got a business to run, and we've got to be realistic in that, you know, where we are as a club and the size of club that we are, competing with some other clubs who are far bigger and can pull in far more resources. So, you know, you quickly get yourself back in a position to know that this is the right thing to do.
And in terms of the transfer window, I think it's a bit of a charade, to be perfectly honest. But it was evident a lot of teams doing their business late on, almost some going right to the wire.
Yeah.
Whereas it was very quiet here. Was there any deals that you were hoping to put through bids late on?
No, not really. You know, the nature of any football club is you're always looking. You're always seeing who's going to become available and who might be an option. But also, as well, we've got a budget. And one of the things that, you know, it's very, very important, particularly when you're fan-led, is that you, when you set out budgets, you stick to them and you are aggressive in that manner. And to be fair to the manager, he's been brilliant at that. You know, he wants to push the club on, he wants to develop, but he's realistic as well about, you know, where this club is and, you know, the problems it historically has gone through in the past, not just this football club, but other football clubs. So, you know, I think he's a good fit in that sense. But, no, in terms of late deals, we're always looking, there's always opportunities. We've always, in actual fact, by the time when we brought in Tom Aldred and Christian Mabulu, who, you know, might be one for the future more than the present, but we're already starting to look towards January next summer already, but who's your contract, where needs strengthened. So you're almost a few transfer windows in lieu once you've got your business done. So, you know, most of our focus is moving now towards the January window and potentially next summer, depending on who might leave and who not. And a lot of that succession plan on based on who you might think might go at any one particular time. And we've got sellable assets, people are obviously interested in them. We've had bids for our players that we've rejected. So there's a fair chance that, you know, that might happen again in January and next summer. And from a club point of view, we've got to be trying to be prepared for it.
And we record 3 days in the back of the team recording their first league victory.
I'm delighted because I knew I was coming on here, so I was nervous all week.
Well, that comes on the back of a good point against Rangers, a game that I think, looking back on, many of us believe we could have won.
Yep.
An excellent win at Livingston, and they've went on to prove how hard a place that is to go to. How do you assess this? That obviously came in the back of two disappointing results where there was a wee bit of negativity, there was a wee bit of backlash, possibly for the first time in the last 16 months.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult start followed by a very good 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think that covers quite a lot of it, to be honest. Listen, the Betfred Cup games, I've found, I don't know what you guys feel as supporters, but certainly I find they're always tricky for the Premier League clubs because you're almost on a hiding to nothing. You know, you're expected to win games. So all the pressure is on you and there's very little on the other teams. And listen, that comes with the territory, you know, but I find myself getting more nervous during these games than I do in terms of being Premier League games because the added pressure of you effectively being the Premier League club and the one that should qualify through the group. So I think if you look at the 3 years of the Betfred, we've never really set the heather on fire massively during the games. If you think back to last summer, we required a last-minute goal at Edinburgh City to beat them up at there. I think we required a goal in the 87th minute to beat Berwick at home. You know, and you know that kind of maybe papered over the cracks in terms of the performances during those games, just because people are rusty. We brought in so many new players, and it was people find their feet. Then we were on, obviously, to lose the first two games to Rangers and St Johnstone that season. And this season has actually followed quite similarly. The only slight difference in one or two of the Betfred games is that we didn't get the late goals, for example, at Stranraer, to get a victory. Still qualified at the group, thankfully. You come on to the league games, you look at Hibs. I thought the team were out of sorts, I think, probably for the first hour, but probably dominated the last hour. I think the manager's idea, and it's a very sound one, is that Hibs are a very good team, spent a lot of money, big club going well, have caused us a lot of problems, particularly since Neil Lennon went there, and the style of play that they have. And the fact that they'd played midweek, I think the manager's view, and I'm not speaking out of school because he mentioned this publicly, was effectively to contain the game as long as he can and then really go for them in the last half hour when he thought they'd be tired. The problem for us is that a couple of individual mistakes meant by the time the last half hour came, we were 3-0 down, which kind of makes the game plan out the window a little bit. The Achies game was a hugely frustrating one for everybody because, much like the Rangers game, I think you could probably, once you take the emotion out of it, and football is all about emotion, particularly supporters, it's all about emotion. Once you take the motion, if you look it back and watch the game, we should have won that game. You know, we were snatching at chances, the things were going wide of the post, and then you're beaten by a wonder goal, and that's always exacerbated because it's your local rivals and because it's Hamilton, and everybody wants to win those games, and it's came in back of a defeat at Hibs, but also a tough time through the Betfred, albeit we qualified. So I can understand why when we got to the Hamilton game, particularly after it, emotion gets in the way and people start to be, perhaps maybe fear that it might be something difficult. So I think, taking that all into account, you've got to then give the manager and the players a huge credit, A, for bouncing back in what was a really tough game against Livingston, a tough pitch, given very little of MD had played on it by that point. And then to follow that up with, I think, probably arguably, in fact, not arguably, it's definitely our two best performances of the season against Rangers and Dundee. Hopefully now it's the guys just starting to motor, we're getting, you know, players back fit. You know, the only real two that are missing now, as you and I speak, are Craig Tanner and Charles Dunn. Everybody else, Liam Donnelly's kind of just about coming back into training now, so we're, you know, the squad is, you know, fulsome. We've got a lot of competition for places, and hopefully that draw against Rangers and the good performance against Dundee will help us now kick on to what is, you know, a tricky set of games coming up. If you think of Hearts and Aberdeen and a few others in that, but there are games to be excited about and games to get, you know, enthused about, and, you know, if we can get into those games and get some results out of that, then hopefully it can lead into a bounce into the autumn and winter period.
It's been a year since you were last on the podcast.
Was it?
And that time there's been a fair amount happening. We'll start with the cups, and last season was a memorable season for these two cup runs. Yes, we did come up short in the finals, but there was many memorable moments along the way. And I think that was maybe heightened by the stinging disappointments we've suffered in the cups in the previous years as well.
The bus season.
It was quite incredible though, and you must have some really fond memories of the roots.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think back to some of the cup performances last year will rank certainly amongst one of my more favourite Motherwell performances of maybe the last decade or so. If you think of the Aberdeen game at Fir Park in the quarterfinals in the Betfred, I think we were excellent that night, 1-3-0, and really blew Aberdeen away. And then obviously the Rangers game and all the fun and frolics that went on around that. You know, but to win those games and to, you know, finally get the, you know, to put Rangers out of a cup, I think it may have been the first time we'd ever done it in the League Cup, or certainly for a long time, certainly in a semi-final anyway, was amazing. And similarly in the Scottish Cup, you know, you think of beating Aberdeen in the semi-final, but even the game against Hearts and, you know, the Karma Hughes strike and, you know, all those memories come flooding back when you think about it. Ultimately, everything was brilliant about the Cups, both from the club's point of view, from a business point of view, but just strap me right back to what football should be about, from excitement and passion and enthusiasm about your club and your area and all those things that really come from good cup runs. And I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, not only for the staff and the people who work at the club, but for supporters and everybody involved. You know, cup runs are just brilliant. And up until maybe the last season, they've been a bit of a rarity, unfortunately. One of the real disappointments over the last 10 years or so has been probably our, you know, fairly poor performances. We had a one cup final and semi-final performance, I think, in 10-11, I think it was, when Stuart McCall was here, where we got to the semi-finals of the League Cup and the final of the Scottish. But bar that, you know, there's been precious little else to get excited about. So from that point of view, to get two, a bit of the buses, to, again, as I said, to have two coming along one season was brilliant. The only disappointment was obviously we didn't, you know, effectively etch our name into history by winning it. We probably will look back, I suppose it's a bit like Andy Murray in tennis, been born in the era of Federer and Nadal. You know, we're probably a wee bit unfortunate we get to two cup finals in the kind of Rodgers era at Celtic, where certainly for the first two seasons, he's, you know, his Celtic team have been, you know, fairly unstoppable when it comes to domestic competition. So maybe a little bit unfortunate to get it in that year, maybe as compared to maybe 2 or 3 years ago, where we may have had a slightly better fighting chance. Maybe this season, who knows? But I think we'll look back on it with fondness, but also maybe a wee sense of what might have been.
And in terms of the league, it was a far more comfortable season than the season that had went before.
Yeah,
Stephen Robinson had to oversee major overhaul of the squad at the start of the season, and what he seemed to assemble was a team that everyone could get behind, a team that seemed to be willing to run through a brick wall for the cause.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this, I've talked about this. I think this isn't just like Conley cheesy marketing words. You actually try to build a team in the image of what we believe this town and this area and the people of this area represent, which is endeavour, hard work, never say die attitude, you know, always prepared to roll their sleeves up and get stuck in. And, you know, if you think of Lanarkshire and the people in this area for the last 100, 200 years, that's synonymous with the people of this town. And, you know, that's something we've talked about openly, myself and the manager and others, about trying to build a team of character, a team that will fight hard for each other in battle. And, you know, and those are all adjectives that I think you can use it to describe. Listen, people also are football fans and they want to see some quality and some football, and we acknowledge that. I think sometimes we may be guilty at times, some of the guys downstairs, about, particularly in our media team, about using those types of words and analogies to try and build the team up, battling and fighting and scrapping and all that sort of stuff. And perhaps because of that, somehow we play gets often overlooked at times. You think of Dundee on Saturday, for example, and some of the first half football was as good as you'll see anywhere. But we kind of pigeonholed a wee bit into that element. But I think, you know, moreover, I think, as I said to you before, it's important for us to build a team that people out there can believe. You talk about identity. You know, people use that word all the time when it comes to football. Identity. What is the identity of the team? And I think that's something when Stephen came in and we spoke. We talked about, for example, St Johnstone having an identity. Every time you played a St Johnstone team, you knew you were getting, they were going to be hard working in your face, you know, making life difficult for you. And we wanted a bit of that. We wanted to make ourselves hard to beat. And I think Stephen, to a certain extent, has done that. And again, you know, without wanting to potentially set ourselves up for a fall, the proof in the pudding will be whether we can continue that this year. But that's what we tried to achieve, as a team of hard workers, battlers, guys who will give everything for the cause, that the supporters will know that, you know, some weeks they'll be poor. We'll go to Aki's last season and lose 2-0 and play really poorly. But most people will look at the guys out there and say, they're trying. They're just not playing well. They're trying, but they're not getting it. And I think most football fans, when they take a step back, can see that from their players. I think they can see the effort. They can see the endeavour. Listen, the size of club that we are, the money we pay players, the people we can attract, you're not going to get top quality performances every single week. That's not just clubs of our size. That's clubs even bigger than us can't even get that. But what we can do is the free stuff, as the manager always calls it in his press conferences, the stuff that you earn the right to play, you work hard, you run, you chase, you harry, you make sure you know your job and your role within the team. And I think, just from a punter's point of view, which is effectively all I am when it comes to talking about the technical aspect of football, I think I can see that. I can see guys really trying hard and working hard. So, yeah, I think the key for the manager is bringing so many players together in such a short period of time, gelling them into a unit. I think he deserves a lot of credit, along with Martin Foyle and Ross, for identifying the right types of people who will buy into that sort of mentality, and that's something we've again tried to do this summer too.
You touched on something that I want to kind of elaborate on a wee bit. The style of football is something that's emphasised, and the term hammer throwers is branded about.
Hoofball is another one.
Yeah, there's outsiders talking about the Scottish game that perhaps are not really qualified to do so at times, and I think our reputation is sometimes built on people that haven't seen very much of us. The frustration the first couple of games was there wasn't much football being played, but it wasn't breeding any results as well.
Yep.
Last season, there was a lot of good football played at times as well, and that was overlooked for a physical semi-final against Rangers, or perhaps the aftermath of the Aberdeen League Cup game, where Ryan Christie had a few words to say about the style of football. But I don't think there's much getting away from the fact there is many talented footballers in that dressing room.
Absolutely. I always find it quite funny. You think of the term hammer throwers, and then you think of Elliot Freer, Gail Bigger-Amana, you know, other guys. It's not what you would exactly class as a hammer thrower. Yeah, listen, we have got big lads as well. I laughed at Stephen Gerrard's remarks after the Rangers game, where he said every time Mother made a sub, they get bigger and bigger and bigger, which I thought was quite funny. Well, listen, we're not the only. I mean, listen, we play Hearts. The Mother fans listen to this, so the next game coming up is Hearts. And Hearts have as many big players, if not more, big physical players than we do. And are making a stale about it. Craig Levein actually said to the manager when he took the job at Hearts, we'd beat them, I think we'd beat them 2-1 just before Craig got the job, if you remember, here at Fir Park. And Craig actually said, it's very complimentary. What I want to build at Hearts is what you've got here at Motherwell, which is a team of who can work hard, big, strong, physical. Yeah, and we have got that when we need to have it. But we've also got players who can play. I think Gail Bigger-Amana has been tremendous for Mull this year, and probably so far, probably, I think, without giving away too much of an exclusive, because people can see it online on Facebook, but I think he's absolutely romped the Player of the Month for August, the fan vote. And I think that's fair. I think he's done right. You wouldn't call Biggie in any way, shape or form a hammer thrower. In fact, he's a very good technical footballer. And we have other ones like that as well. You're right to say, in big games, when results have went for us, I think it's an often an easy and a lazy excuse. In terms of people who don't watch your game making comment, there was a perfect example of that on one of the national satellite broadcasters last Friday, when a pundit, a Scottish pundit who never watches Scottish football, described Motherwell as 11 bouncers, which I think is extremely disrespectful, particularly for somebody who doesn't watch us a lot. And I think unfair and undue criticism for professional footballers. Do we play percentage football? Yeah, we do. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think we take as less risks as is possible. You know, I've seen Mourinho talking about that recently. He's getting slighted a lot, Mourinho, but he talks about the team who make less mistakes tend to be the team that win football matches. And when you bring it down to our level, our manager's philosophy has always been, it's not about no football or hoofball, it's about trying to play football in the right areas, taking as less risks as you possibly can in a certain areas of the pitch. And listen, seeing results are not going for you, that's the obvious thing that's going to come out. And listen, the manager understands that and players understand that. They're not silly and they're not stupid. But I think it's for them to be headstrong and to keep doing what they're doing and try and convince people through performances on the park and results, in the end, that what they're doing is right. And hopefully, you know, with two wins and a draw in the last three, including getting through to the quarterfinals of the Betfred Cup again, that we're beginning to do that again. And with the addition of likes of Danny Johnston now breaking into the team, and Gail Biggeramana's resurgence back into the 11, Elliot Freer really tapping at the door as well, that we can breed a bit of both when we need to, which is be big and strong and physical when we have to be, but also in the right areas have good footballers who can go and play and create chances for us too.
And I focused on the players quite a lot, but the job that Stephen Robinson's done can't be understated, can it? Because it was a manager that was appointed and perhaps didn't catch the imagination at the time, and then he's proven himself in both recruiting and the performances and the results over the last 18 months or so.
And don't also underestimate the job that he has to do in terms of the model we talked about earlier on. You know, he's key and pivotal to the sale of players. He's got contacts, he talks, he's effectively the club's biggest marketing tool when it comes to players, how he conducts himself in front of cameras and press conferences, you know, the contacts that he have, the advice that he gives when people phone him up about players, you know, that's very, very crucial. So that's a big part of his remit as well. And, you know, you could argue that he's almost done that better than any Motherwell manager, certainly in recent memory, in terms of the players that have been traded under his watch. He has done a fantastic job. You think of the number of records that he's broke. I mentioned one almost kind of half tongue in cheek about Saturday, where he's only Motherwell manager now to win four consecutive games at Dens Park. And I say that as somebody who, like yourself, probably went through the 80s and 90s and the early 2000s going to Dens Park and Tannadice and barely seen us ever win a game. And to go there now and do it and win games regularly is fantastic. I think his win record is a win percentage is somewhere between 45% and 50%, which, you know, puts you right up there with any Motherwell manager, you know, comparable with any Motherwell manager in history. I think he's doing a great job. Listen, he will be the first to admit all football clubs have peaks and troughs. You know, you go through good runs of form, you go through bad runs of form. I think the key for us now as a football club is you trying our best to get some modicum of stability if you can. That's not always easy in football. You just seen this week, you know, two clubs, St Mirren in Scotland and Bradford in England, changing their manager. And that's not the first change already in the Scottish Premiership. So I'm just hoping that, you know, through continuing to play good football, continuing to attract good players, continuing to sell players the right manner, that we're actually starting to build hopefully some level of continuity. And, you know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed in front of you and you're looking at me doing it, that is not the kiss of death. But, you know, that's what I'm hoping for, that Stephen has been here in the long haul. I think he enjoys it. I think he enjoys the club. I think he enjoys the atmosphere at the club. He certainly enjoys playing for the supporters. I think he gets it. He gets the whole aspect of being a multiple manager and getting involved in so many different areas. You know, the things he does away from the what people see which is effectively a Saturday at 3 o'clock and maybe some press conferences, is, you know, improvement at the gym, improvement at the training ground, and it's him that's driving that, it's him and I, he's pushing me hard to make that better. And I think that's brilliant for the club, that you've got a manager who's so determined and so desperate to self-improve, and Stephen's got that and treats the club almost as if it's his own money and its own time and effort. I mean, you've got a guy like that, then I think it's a good fit for the football club. So, you know, I can't praise him highly enough. I agree with you, it wasn't necessarily a sexy name at the time, but I think sometimes you've got to see beyond the sexiness and try and see what is it somebody can bring to the table, what attributes have they got. And you know, I think Stephen ticked a lot of boxes in that sense, and you know, hopefully, you know, it's what people agree, it's worked okay so far, and you know, fingers crossed it continues to work well in the future.
It was a lock in the door or something like that. He was phoning you through the night for wasn't it?
It was a lock in the female toilet door in the gym, and that had become a big issue for him. And you know, he lost the head because it hadn't been done. And that, we kind of having a laugh and a joke about that, but that just shows you how relentless he is about self improvement all the time. Not just self improvement, I mean, for the club in general. You know, you'll not let things lie. He's constantly on my case. In fact, we were having a wee debate about that the other day there. And I don't mind that, you know. I think chief execs and people and executives and management of football clubs, in order to keep it going, need to be pushed by the manager. Because if the manager stops pushing and I stop pushing the manager, then things become stale. So we have that relationship where we have that, you know, we have that drive for each other to do better. And, you know, as I said, I can't praise him highly enough. I think he's a right temperament for the job. Hopefully that people enjoy his honesty. I think you get that from him. And long may it continue.
Obviously, in football, there's difficult times as well. And over the last year, I think the most obvious difficult spell was the aftermath of the Celtic Cup final and the two subsequent games after that, where there was heightened attention, there was things said, and perhaps the heat of the moment. You yourself personally came under a wee bit of scrutiny.
Yeah, an interesting Twitter feed that week.
You've always got quite an interesting Twitter feed, I believe. But that time, is it hard to not get caught up in the emotion and take a step back?
Yeah, listen, in terms of to address that person, which I've never done publicly, you know, I don't hold any bad thoughts or bad feelings. We sorted that myself and Celtic through Peter and Brendan himself, you know, sorted all that out. You know, I think a bit of a misunderstanding, to be quite honest, and, you know, I never pushed it further than that. Listen, when you play any team three times in a week, the wee things that, you know, normally get built up in a game and you don't play them again for another month or two, you know, dissipate, and, you know, by the time you meet them again, it's forgotten about. When you play them three times in a week, those things carry over from game to game to game, particularly as we'd been competitive in the first two of those games, if you remember back. The cup final was very close, you know, the decision went against us in the final, which made the Celtic probably slightly easier in the last 20 minutes or so. And then obviously at Fir Park, you know, we were winning up until the last second of the game, and then only to pull it back. So there's a lot of things going on there that had happened. But, you know, from that point of view, listen, it's all about pantomime, to be quite frank. You know, you and I have talked about this, you know, off air, if you like, about particularly social media and how it can blow things out of proportion in terms of, you know, reality to this kind of daft world that you have on there at times. And I think the key is just not to get too absorbed in it. And, you know, is it stressful at the time? Yeah, of course it is. Of course it's stressful. You don't want to be in the Sunday Mail, the back page of the Sunday Mail. You don't want, you know, your Twitter feed getting absolutely or more barraged than it usually gets from people, Celtic fans at the time. But listen, there's absolutely no bad feeling there at all. As I said, it was completely sorted out, man to man, face to face, with and the relationships between the clubs and the people and individuals concerned are strong. So, you know, no issues or problems there. But, you know, again, I think, to repeat myself, I think that's kind of symptomatic of, you know, a number of games talk like with each other, and you inevitably get some fallout from it.
And we've mentioned it was a year ago since the last podcast. That one centred around Project Brave, and your thoughts on that. Muddle, since then, have been named as one of the elite clubs.
Yep.
How much have your views changed on Project Brave, if at all?
Not really, to be quite frank. What I would say is, and I've said this, I think, publicly, not obviously in your show, but in other outputs, social media and others, that now that we're in it, that we'll embrace it to its full extent. There's no point in us being in it, sitting in a huff in the corner moaning about it. You know, we're in it and we've committed to being in it, and listen, the thing about Brave is that there was loads of good things in Brave. And I remember saying that on your show at the time. There's lots to be positive there. I don't mind increasing coaching standards. I don't mind, you know, having better people involved. I don't mind having, you know, better games against teams. They're all good, really good points. My real objection to it was that some way that we're creating this almost elitist environment where plenty of really good football clubs who have history of producing players were effectively getting locked out. And I think subsequently there have been one or two clubs who have completely folded their academies, and whether that's a direct result of Brave or not, then I don't know enough about it to comment. But both clubs involved, Falkirk and Livingston, are the two ones I can think of at the top of my head, have highlighted Brave as a part of their reason. You know, I know the SFA have hit back at that and said that it's not, but you know, that I warned Stuart Regan at the time of the potential for collateral damage for good clubs who have been involved in it, and that's happened whether directly through Brave or indirectly. But we're in it, we have embraced it, we are doing everything that we can at the fullest. You know, Steve McManus is our full-time under-18s coach, David Clarkson's now full-time at the club as the head of Intermedia Academy, Jamie Ewing's another former player as the head of goalkeeping. So there are plenty of really good people now involved in the academy. Michael King is now the head of medical and sports science at the academy, again a person that we never had, or a position that we never had previously. So all those things have costed us money. I get that, and again that was another part of my worry about it, was how does a club like us or Hamilton or Kelly or the people who have not made the elite, you know, your Partick Thistles and St Mirren's and, you know, all these good clubs or and clubs with histories of producing young players, how do they afford all that sort of stuff? But what we've effectively had to do is absorb it into the cost of the business, try and generate additional funds. We talked about player sales and cup finals and different elements of the commercial business, trying to fundraise and do other bits and bobs to try and make sure it's affordable for the business. And we've done that. And you know, all the guys are employed and they're doing a good job. But, you know, my fundamental view on it doesn't change. And, you know, I still think, to be fair to the SFA, what I should say in the intervening time is I can't remember quite what level we're at of the debate and discussion at the time, but they have come along. They've got a progressive performance element now where people are effectively sitting below that tier and there's going to be an element to try and get in that. So I should say through Malky, who, you know, I know divides a lot of opinions. I've heard a few of your shows talking about Malky, but, you know, I've always gone really well with him, and I can only speak positively about him in terms of how he helped move it on a little bit and get it over the line, in a sense. You know, I think there were some concessions made there that made it far more palatable for a lot of people. Is it the right thing to do? Again, as I've said in a couple of answers, only the proof of the pudding will be in the eating again. You know, whether we're back sitting around the table in a couple of years' time reviewing it all remains to be seen. But hopefully, the net result and the end product of Brave is in 5 or 6 or 7 years' time, or however long it takes to percolate through, that we've got better quality of Scottish international footballers at the end of it, because that's what it's designed to do.
Well, you've got your box of 8 craft beers to celebrate the next 8 victories. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give a wee shout out to the sponsors, Beer 52. If you'd like a case of free craft beer as a listener to the MFC podcast, we'd like to thank you for listening with the help of our friends at beer52.com. If you just go to beer and the numbers 5and2.com/MFC, you can claim your free case. Beer 52 is the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club, searching out incredible and exclusive small batch craft beers from the world's greatest breweries and bringing them back for their members. As a listener to our show, you can try your first case for free. All you need to do is pay them $2.95 postage and packaging. That's 8 incredible craft beers, a ferment magazine and a snack delivered next day shipping. There's no minimum commitment, you just take the free case, try the beers and see what you think. If it's not for you, you can pause or cancel your subscription at any time. And Beer 52 has a 5-star rating on Trustpilot, so it's clear to see that Beer 52 members love their service. So head on over to beer52.com/MFC to pick up your free case today. We'll move things off the park, and the club continue to do great things behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Firstly, I'd like to mention the stadium itself, which is looking absolutely fantastic. There's, even as we speak just now, there's work going on outside. Yeah. The tunnel, the pitch, the dugout areas, the new scoreboard. I don't think the old place has ever looked better.
Yeah, listen, we're sitting right now, you and I are sitting in a stand here at Fir Park. It's a place he's 75, 80 years old. You know, it's not easy. And I should pay a lot of credit to Alan Marshall and his team, who have you know, working very, very hard every day to make improvements to the place, and obviously Suzanne in the commercial department, who's facilitated a lot of these improvements by some fantastic commercial deals. So we're trying our best to make it as good as it can be. Are we even close to where we want to be? Absolutely not. We want to try and continue to make things better. We want to improve different areas. you know, but people will understand it. You know, we don't have huge, you know, budgets to just effectively go and do everything at one time. I mean, that tunnel, as you see at the moment, is probably taking us 3 years, 4 years to get there, as we do bit by bit, bit by bit. And that's what I'm committed to doing, is to try and make every time something comes back after every summer, there's something else that's improved and something else that's got better. And that's important to me. I think the facility in the area that we have here has to be the best it can be. You know, over the last 2 years, we've replaced the east end roof, we've put a new scoreboard in, we've redone the pitch, we've put a new irrigation system in, we've taken away the wall in front and put in a new AstroTurf area, we've redone the tunnel, we've done bits of the dressing room, some of the toilets around the stadium are getting improved, and a whole host of other things. We've improved all the suites, the boardroom, the Millennium, the Centenary Suite have all been upgraded, the bar areas have all been upgraded, we've put a new sound system in the Cooper, we've put a new air conditioning system in the Cooper. So those are just some of the things off the top of my head that I'm throwing at you, and you know, that's, I hope people can see and I hope people feel that we're trying to make it better. Yeah, a lot of that is aesthetics, because you know, we're confined quite considerably by the facility and the age of it and the location of it to doing too much, and from a budget point of view, you know, we'd love to do more, but I hope people can see just small improvements here and there. And you know, I received a brilliant note from somebody on social media just a couple of weeks ago after the first game against Edinburgh, and he had mentioned the front of the main stand and how Willie, the grounds, one of the ground staff here, had boxed it all in and it's been painted all clad and it just looks brilliant. You know, he said, I think the woman had said her dad was 84 and had never seen it looking so good and all that. And you know, that stuff really, you know, really pulled at my heartstrings a wee bit. You know, and that's what I'm trying to achieve, is when people come here, they just see wee bits of notable improvement. And all I'm trying to do, Andy, is create a better environment, A, for the supporters, but also for the players and the staff who work here every day. And if people see you're trying to improve it, people buy into what you're trying to do, you know, and that's what I've tried to do at the football club. If every day the players come in, the gym's improved and it's better, you know, the dressing room's area, the tunnel's better, the pitch is better, the roundabouts, the surrounding areas and the dugouts are better, players buy into it, players can see what you're trying, and they're hopefully getting bored with it as well. So, you know, that's the thinking behind it. It's not just for show, it's not just because we want to do it, we actually feel there's a tangible benefit to doing it. And hopefully, as I said, there'll be more improvements to come. You know, still a couple of big projects around the PA system and one or two other bits and bobs that will still go over the line and finished, but you know, they're very much on the agenda for us.
And when you're doing all these good things, you need to promote it, and
yeah,
the podcast is running the risk of beginning to begin to be the biggest catharsis for the media team at Motherwell that there is. But it can be understated. There's so much great promotional work going on, the cup final videos,
yep,
season ticket videos.
Yep.
We've had a bunch on our website.
Yeah, they've done a brilliant job there. And by just on the podcast, I think it's right for the podcast to be positive when it's right to be positive, because then it's fair. But at the same time, it's also right to be critical when it's time to be critical. And I think that's where you guys have got the balance with quite rightly. So I know that's kind of off topic, but I think it's worthwhile.
I think
you've got right when it's not going right to say it's not right. And I think, people at me in the club and people at the club will take that, if when things are positive, you say things are positive, and that's fine. And we all exist in that environment, we all understand it. But yeah, just to go back on topic on the media guys, listen, they do a fantastic job. Probably the biggest feeling that I've had, though, I should say this, and this is going to sound really boring for everybody, is we need to commercialise that a wee bit more without really disturbing the product, in a sense. And that's something we'll do internally that fans will probably never really notice too much. But that's something we need to do internally, because the work is brilliant. I mean, the output is as good as any in Scotland. I think everybody would agree with that, particularly for the size of club and the budget we have. That comes from boys. The three boys in there really pushing themselves to be better and better and better. I should also say the three boys in there, plus some of the volunteers, yourself and one of them when it comes to the women's team, and a numerous others on match days who help us out and help make the overall product great. You know, that's really pleasing. I want to make that impact more on the bottom line. I think it has intangibles when it comes to the bottom line, about hopefully how people feel about the club, how we promote games, how we promote tickets and all that sort of stuff. Those are all the slightly intangibles. It's difficult to know, but you know, how do I feel about my club and how that translates into me buying a top or buying a ticket or buying a season ticket or whatever it might be. But there are more direct ways we can make it more lucrative for the club and the business. And that's something that Grant and I are working on right now, and you know, Susie's involved very much in that as well. And you know, I want to pay particular tribute to Susie as well, because I think sometimes, because of the front end of the media stuff that we do, the club, you know, focuses a lot of attention on there. But behind all that, the commercial department's doing fantastically well as well. You know, Susie's done the, you know, the biggest shirt deal in 10 years. We've got the, you know, the biggest short sponsorship the club's ever done. You know, fantastic work going on there in the background from some really talented people, and that whole side's kind of one and the same in a sense. So yeah, I'm really, really pleased with the staff that I've got in there at the moment. I think they're doing a fantastic job. The numbers we're getting, I think, off the top of my head, the video views just on social media alone for the month of August were over 1 million, which is astounding, really. And we now have technology. We now partner up with a software company that gives us actually the cash benefit value to the sponsors for that, so we can show our sponsors what this sort of content is actually driving them. I mean, just a daft example, I'm sure everybody's seen the Will Smith video now talking about Motherwell. Put that on our social media channels, and I think the last look was at 275,000 video watches on Twitter, which is just unbelievable for a club of our size. And you know, we've done the suicide video, which was brilliant. I thought really well done, really sensitively handled. And again, 400,000 people watching it, and that's a benefit not only for the message it's trying to deliver, but also the whole aspect of the club. You've also got Peter Hartley, you've got the cup final videos, you've got some of the, you know, player personality pieces around players vs coaches and all that things that are doing really, really strong numbers. Yeah, so I mean, all that is really good and really nice, and it makes people feel a bit. Like every business, and I'm boring people talking about business all the time, but every business, everything you do has to impact on the bottom line somewhere. So that's our challenge with them is, listen, we've done the first part, which is get the content good, get it relevant, get it to what people enjoy. Same with the website. We've done a study with the people on the website. People use it. And the feedback we got overwhelming was what people were interested in is football, the footballers, the club, what they're doing. And that's what we've tried to reflect in the website. And hopefully people enjoy it. And the fact that more than one person going at it one time's a nice tangible bonus for everybody. We can announce a signing without a complete blow up of the server, which is particularly pleasing. So yeah, I mean, listen, there's loads of good stuff going on at that end of it. There's more good stuff to come to. You know, so I'm really pleased with the guys, what they're doing. And I think actually the most exciting and innovative content is still to come, which is the really exciting part.
And obviously having a fully functioning website, having the online ticketing service, yeah, now as well, it brings the club kind of in line with the Premiership rivals.
Yeah, and you'd be right to criticise me and the club for being quite slow to get to that point. I mean, in 2018, you've had online booking systems for 20 years. You know, what really drove it home for us was the Betfred Cup final. People had to come and stand in queue in the rain for 4 hours for tickets. And, you know, in 2017, as it was at that time, but just about to get into 2018, that's just unthinkable. You know, what we talked about internally was, you know, you wouldn't dream of booking your flight to Alicante and then having to go to Glasgow Airport and queue for 4 hours for your flight and then drive home to go and get your flight. So we're asking football fans to do the same. And listen, I know when it comes to cup finals, sometimes there's a wee bit of romance about queuing for your ticket, and you know, that's all part of us, the fun of it all. But really, in the modern world, people should be able to buy their tickets online using their phone or their computer. And we've got to that point, and I'm delighted, and I'm actually really pleased that we managed to implement that without too many major hitches, because when you do a big project like that, sometimes you have problems. But touch wood, so far it's been not too bad. But that's only the real start for that, Andy. That's only the start for that. That's only the real beginning of what I want to achieve there. Because what I want to do is have an online system at the club where all the things that we buy and do all feed into the one area. We can be far smarter about how we communicate. We can be far more targeted in how we communicate. Give people, when it comes to communications to them, a far more personalised and relevant experience when it comes to, you know, what we're trying to promote, what we sell, what people want in it. Up until very, very recently, in terms of our data, it was very, very broad and not specific. And with the invention of the online ticketing system, which gives a manual entry system, it allows us to start building up data and profiling on people. And that may sound all Big Brother, but it's not really Big Brother, or it's not really you know, meant to be like that. What it's meant to be is to give people a more personalised experience when it comes to their football club. What is it they like? What is it they want to hear about? What is it they want to be talked about? That's what it's all about for us, and that's what we're aiming to get to right at the start of the journey. The club are prepared to make investments into, you know, further software over the next years, months and years coming up, which will take us to the next level. And that's what we're committed to doing. Grant and I have been on case studies at football clubs down south. We've looked at various you know, strategies that people have in terms of that whole side of the business. So we're well on the way to that, and that's really exciting for me. It sounds may sound boring to lots of people, but it's really exciting to me about how we can really develop that side of the business further. And that's one of the things, one of the key kind of considerations that I'll be working on over the next 12 to 18 months for sure.
And we touched on the suicide awareness video as well. That was a massive thing, highlighting an issue that has affected a number of people in Motherwell and the surrounding areas in recent times. It was fantastic to see the football club make a stance on that and use the vast following that the club has to promote such a serious issue.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely bang on. That's, listen, I maybe have crassly described it about viewing numbers, and please believe me, anybody that knows me knows that's not what I meant. What I meant was, you know, it got such a big hit because I think the guy's done it so well. I think it was so well shot and really touched a nerve in terms of the message it was trying to deliver. And to be fair to Grant and Ali and Lewis, the boys who put it together, I think that is because they took a lot of advice from our partners at NL Suicide Prevention, who were really helped us in terms of the wording and helped us in terms of the tone and how it felt. I agree with you. I think the huge tragedy in recent months to have so many youngsters take their own lives. But I think what one of the football club's key one of the key points that it can really have, one of the key drivers it can really have, is having an influence in people's lives. You probably heard me talk about that before, is about how the football club can get into people and talk to people that often traditional forms of communication can't. You know, you think of, are people likely to read a post on a doctor's surgery or on a bus, or are they like to listen to Peter Hartley and Chris Cadden and Andy Rose and Stephen Robinson talk about something which is so taboo? And I think it's the latter. I think definitely it's the latter. And that's why I think the football club have a real important role to play there. And it's not just a role to tick a box, it's not just a CSR frilly bit around the edge that makes your end of your report look really nice. I think it's actually genuinely important for this football club to talk about issues such as suicide, mental health awareness, and hopefully help people when they really need it. And by helping people, for us, is really just letting people know of what help's available to them. And that's where the football club can come in. That's where it can drive it, be it signage at games, be it articles in the programme, be it innovative videos such as the one that we've talked about there. That's where the club can actually really help. And I think, actually, from our point of view, help grow that supporter base, help grow the trust and the feeling that exists between the supporters and the club. If people genuinely believe that football club not only care about the local community, but actually want to play a positive role within the local community, and that's hopefully through our, you know, the great work at Dawn and the community trust team do, some of the media output that we put together, but actually just generally taking it seriously as well. You know, so that's hugely important to me. I think it's important to the club, and I hope that people see that we're trying to make a real positive impact in this area in what is a really difficult and sensitive subject.
And just to wrap up, over the summer you were promoted onto the SPFL board as well.
Forgot about that.
Your rise up the ranks has been well documented, I think.
Yeah. Don't ask the Overtron story again, surely.
No, not yet. We'll get to that now. Your rise has been well documented, and you've clearly done a fantastic job at every level to get to where you are. It's not something that's happened by chance. So,
thanks.
Though you couldn't have envisaged the journey. It sounds very X-Factor-ish, doesn't it? But that you've had at the football club that you love.
Yeah, do you know, all that comes down to just hard work. I'm so passionate about this football club, you know, so determined to do it well. You know, I think when you've got that level of commitment to something, then it doesn't feel like a job, it's just a way of life, really. And listen, I go back to earlier, it sounds soppy, but I'm also backed by a really strong family who allowed me to go and do that. But yeah, I mean, listen, I've started at the very bottom. I came in just doing the website, been in the comms, general manager, COO, and then CEO, and, you know, had three different owners on that time. In fact, I've three different owners in the last 4 years, between John Boyle, Les Hutchison, and obviously now the Welsh Society. And all I've just tried to do, Andy, is just comment it with an honesty, you know, no trying, you know, pull the wool over people's eyes, admit mistakes, try things, learn from mistakes. And all those things, I think, hopefully have served me well. In terms of the SPFL board position, you know, I've sat on the sidelines for so long now, you know, having an opinion on things, wanting to change things without really taking that plunge. And the reason why it took me 4 years is because, first and foremost, I wanted to try and get myself a bit more comfortable in the role that I was doing. I think it, you know, I don't think it's wrong for me to say, because people are not stupid, that when I took on the role of a general manager, that was really the first time I'd done a job at that level and that of that seniority. So it was important for me, like I'd done with my previous job, to really learn the job and, you know, the pitfalls and, you know, the areas I needed to concentrate on. And I think, you know, like anything, when you do it for so often and you're working with really talented people like Derek Weir and Jim McMahon, Andrew Wilson and, you know, Lee Ironman, she was here previously, and many others that I could name, that you start to learn things, you get to put your own stamp on it eventually when you do learn them. So it was important for me not to neglect what I was doing here at Mullow. But I think after 4 years and the experiences that I've had, you know, that combined with, you know, the team that I've put together here at the club, where I think the staffing level now is, you know, is as good as it's ever been, certainly in the 11 years that I've been here. Really, really strong staff group at the moment. And I'm confident that I could then take the step into, you know, doing a wee bit more at the senior level of Scottish football. And as I said, I'll come at that role the same way I've come at the role at Mullow, which is, you know, a desire to be, you know, improve the game and desire to be the best it possibly can be. I still, even though I've been doing this for 11 years, Andy, still retain that general fan aura about me, if you like. I'm just you know, you watch me any game on a Saturday and you see me acting, that's the reason why I don't sit in director's boxes. I can't because I just revert back to a fan, and sometimes maybe people might not agree with that. Other people might think it's quite charming that, you know, the people who run the club still retain that element of just their general love for the club and, you know, the ups and downs that a supporter goes through. But I'll come at my league role just the same way, which is an honest desire to make it as good as I can be, do it as hard, a good a job as I can, work as hard as I possibly can. And, you know, we'll see at the end of that year if I've managed to make a big difference. Obviously, it's a big time for the league. The TV deal's coming up, as you mentioned. But also, I think Scottish football's generally end up. One of the real positives I've seen over the last, you know, I would say last 6 to 12 months, is that Scottish football fans now are far more determined to defend their product against attack, whereas we probably over the last, you know, a couple of decades have been probably the biggest guilty party in criticising the product. And I've seen that shift over the last 12 months or so, where people are now becoming more positive about it. They're really talking it up. They're really becoming, you know, I'm talking not just Mullow, I'm talking about generally as an industry. You know, I've seen, for example, when the Burnley played Aberdeen, Scottish football fans very, very defensive about the game. And I think that's positive. I think we need to try and harness that positivity, take in the new TV deal, and actually use that positivity from fans and actually trying to create some sort of closer relationship between that TV deal and fans, and people will go to games and try and protect it a little bit. And that's hopefully what I can try and bring to the table in a part of those discussions, is try and representing so often the forgotten people in football, which can be the people who go to live games. So yeah, the positivity around the game, the positive deals that we're doing as a league, the upturn, I think, and hopefully the upturn in the national team, you know, going into this next campaign, I think just hopefully serves to a more healthy industry. And if I can play any part in that through the SPFL board, then I'll be delighted to do that.
And just the final question, you maybe were wondering if the final question would ever come, but you're never one to...
Brendan's still asleep.
you're never one to kind of stand still and watch what's going on. Uh-huh. You always seem to be trying to push forward. Have you got any immediate goals for perhaps the next 6 months here at Fir Park?
Yeah, I think, listen, we've made a lot of changes now. I don't want to go back and bore too much, but what I talked about earlier on about commercialising our media output, getting far more smarter when it comes to communications. You know, I just want... Supporters have shaped this football club for 132 years. We're now fan-owned. So I want to try and harness the positivity of supporters into shaping the club in the future. And that's why... That's doing the things I wanted to do there. I felt a real... I think the Well Society is on the up. I think the... season tickets, I've just looked at the numbers there, we've now pushed through the 4,000 barrier, which I'm trying to just get actual numbers as to whether that might be the highest we've ever had. So these are all positive things that I want to try and build on. Don't rest in the laurels. What's the next thing we can improve? You know, can we continue to look at the academy and improve that? Can the match day experience be better? Can we improve that? Can our communication levels be improved even further than we have? Can the commercial deals be better than what we have? Those are all the things that I'm trying to do on a day-to-day basis. So, yeah, I think that there's not one silver bullet. I'm just constantly elements to improve the business, to improve what we're doing as a product, to hopefully enhance the supporter experience, to hopefully improve the bottom line through better commercial deals. Those are all things. It all sounds really boring and really, you know, uninteresting perhaps to the general, but you know, that's what I see my role as a CEO, is to constantly just improve all areas of the business. And I've been fairly satisfied by how it's been, but as you'll know, you mentioned it there, I'm a relentless self-improver. I want to make myself better, I want to make the club better, I want to make all the people at the club better, and every single day I come in here, I'll be wanting to try and do that.
Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back following the Hearts game. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Old fashioned, do it like they did.